tinfoil goblets. As she says, that was the Middle Ages, but they never found out what the Middle Ages were. There were other examples. Copying hieroglyphics on brown wrapping paper without ever knowing what the hieroglyphics stood for. They spent a lot of time being creative because they were told that was the way to be happy. At age 10, they were functionally illiterate. Reading hadn't begun until third grade. I have a set of the old McGuffey readers, back when education was old hat. The first volume is for kindergarten. Sadly, this young lady says that upon graduation, all the happy young children fell down the hill. No matter what high school they went to, they were the underachievers, more handicapped than any underprivileged children. One of her fellow students killed himself after flunking out of the worst high school in New York at age 20. Others have put in time at various mental hospitals. Her own mother was advised to give her psychological tests to find out why she was blocking out information. She wasn't blocking it out. She didn't have any information to begin with. Rejected by all four-year colleges, she finally got a degree by way of a start in junior college. She rejoices that her 8-year-old younger brother was yanked out of the same progressive school when her mother finally saw the light and didn't want him to be like her. Her poignant closing line should be over the door of every teacher's college in America. Quote, "And now I've come to see that the real job of school is to entice the student into the web of knowledge, and then, if he's not enticed, to drag him in. I wish I had been." This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan in his own voice, brought to you by K-Brush Concrete. Anything to do with concrete, from a 5x5 walkway to a 500,000 square foot foundation. Call 423-4033.
KPRL presents Sound Off, the longest-running radio talk show in San Luis Obispo County. Sound Off on the North County's choice for local talk, KPRL. The views and opinions expressed on Sound Off do not necessarily reflect those of KPRL, its management, staff, or sponsors.
Sound Off on AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Davis Body Shop, your auto collision specialist in Paso Robles and Atascadero.
This is Sound Off, where the North County comes to talk on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Well, good afternoon. This is Al Fonzie. Welcome to Sound Off on this brand new year. The phone lines are open, 238-5775. Give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind this year. You know, there's an old Chinese curse. It says, may you live in interesting times. And interesting times in China were not a good thing because the average person in China was a farmer. And the last thing they wanted was any kind of turmoil in their life, whether it be from natural hazards or a visit from government troops or tax collectors or anybody else. Just leave us alone and may the emperor stay far, far away. Unfortunately, what started off as a ordinary New Year degenerated rather quickly before the evening was up into a terrorist attack in New Orleans, reminding us that whether we like it or not, we're living in interesting times. And it was doubled up the next morning to find out that there was a second attack in Las Vegas. Now, what do we know? We don't know a whole lot. We don't know why these guys did what they did. One, I guess we do. The one was a former, an individual basically had a collapse in his personal life. He financially, he just hit everything in the wrong way. He was doing okay in the Army, got out of the Army about the time he broke up with his first wife, went to college, got a degree, decided to become a realtor right about the time COVID was hitting, about the same time you also had the markets dropping and everything else. It was a terrible time to try to become a realtor. About half of realtors don't make it after the first year or so anyway, and in this case, the guy wound up $28,000 in credit card debt, another $28,000+ and behind in payments for his house, losing everything, was radicalized, and he comes from an Islamic background and basically started on the internet getting radicalized and becoming angry at the world and said he was a devotee of ISIS, decided to drive a truck, down Bourbon Street in New Orleans and killed a number of people, wounded more, crippled a number, I'm sure. Quite tragic, the whole thing. And you just look again, like, once again, the authorities, like, what were they thinking? They had problems blocking off the streets. They had a police car blocking Bourbon Street. But it didn't occur to them that all he had to do was drive around the police car, which is exactly what he did, and drove down the sidewalks and back out on the road and mowed a lot of people down with an electric vehicle power truck, which is hard to hear. They're very quiet, and a lot of people probably never knew what was happening until they were actually struck by the vehicle. You look at this and say, well, how would they not figure that out? Because it's happened multiple times before. It just happened a few weeks before in Germany at a Chris Kindle Mart. Someone drove a vehicle through a crowd of people. It's happened before in Germany. I think like 95 people were injured and quite a few killed. It's happened multiple times in the last 5 or 6 years. This is not a new experience, yet we always seem to be shutting the barn door afterwards and relearning the same old lessons over and over and over again. And then I have to ask myself, you know, we got a new administration coming in, and people are saying, well, we can't have these new guys coming in. They don't have intelligence experience. And I said, how can they go wrong? How can they do a worse job than we've done? I mean, the intelligence agencies, the national security agencies, the FBI have been working very hard at Joe Biden's preferred national threat from white Christian nationalists who want to take over America. And he's had the FBI dutifully out arresting parents who go to PTA meetings and complain about incompetent school administrators, people who pray in front of abortion clinics. And, oh, yes, let's not forget January 6th, all those people who stepped off a sidewalk onto the lawn in the wrong place in the restricted area had the FBI chase them down and bring them in and charge them with federal misdemeanor charges, plead guilty to them, some of which still got jail sentences. I'm not talking about the people who were fighting policemen or the people who were smashing their way into the Capitol. I'm talking about hundreds and hundreds of people who were tracked down by the FBI who did virtually not a whole lot more but follow a crowd into the building or near a building or walked on the wrong areas or supposedly roped off by federal authorities. The bottom line is, you know, there's real threats out there, and some of our national agencies really need to get their act together and start focusing on the real threats to this country. Just because we abandoned the war on terror doesn't mean the terrorists have abandoned their war on us. They're out there. They hate you. They're going to destroy you. But this war with them, by the way, has been going on for 1,300 years since Islam became a religion. And in the deserts of Saudi Arabia, you know, they started off by slaughtering Jewish tribes in southern Saudi Arabia and other places. Then they started slaughtering each other because they weren't quite the correct version of Islam. And half the casualties that took place in the Iraq War was sectarian violence between different sects of Islam killing each other. And Sunnis versus Shia, Shia versus Sunni, then all the tribal mixtures in between, blowing up cars, trucks, whatever they could find, suicide bombers, killing each other with glee, as they've done quite readily for the last 1,300 years, when they're not killing Christians or Jews or anybody else, because they've been waging a war against the West as well. They're very patient people. They're prepared to wage war for eternity if need be, until every last person on the earth converts or dies or submits. And a lot of people have been telling you for a long time, starting with President Bush, that this is a religion of peace, that you have nothing to worry about. Some people have distorted it into something else. No. If you look back at its history, if you can find a history book that will actually tell you the truth, they will tell you that basically Islam was spread by sword and by fire and threats of death, dismemberment, mutilation, stealing women, girls, whatever they could find, taking whatever they wanted for as long as they wanted. It's a great religion for unemployed young men who want to find something to do. When someone says, go out and do this for Allah, you'll have paradise, you'll have virgins, you'll have wealth, you'll have happiness forever. Freely give your life for Allah, and you will have bliss for all eternity. And that's what's been going on, and it's still going on. And this man who was absolutely becoming destitute and desperate decided he would become a disciple of ISIS, Islamic State in Syria and Iraq, and basically sacrificed his life in the process, tried to kill some policemen, tried to kill others when his truck was stopped. He came out shooting, and the officers, two officers were wounded, were shooting him at him as they went down, and their shots were better aimed than his, and they took him out. And then you have this bizarre, and I mean bizarre, case in Las Vegas, and I'm not sure what happened there. You had an active duty Army Master Sergeant who served in Special Forces, my old unit, which moved from Fort Devens, Massachusetts to Colorado Springs back in the 1990s, the 10th Special Forces Group. Guy who has, I guess, about 18 years of service. What drove him to go to Las Vegas in a rented Tesla filled with low-grade explosives, commercial explosives, over-the-counter explosives, which are not very powerful, and set all this off. But he's also died by gunshot wound to his head, which makes me say, what is going on here? How did he detonate these explosives? Unless he lit a fuse or something, I don't know. But how did he manage to get shot in the head and still detonate this stuff? There's more questions than answers in that one. What motivated that individual? What's going on with him? I have no clue. The guy's close to retirement. 20 years. I mean, that's when you can retire in the military. So we'll have to wait and see on that. And I guess in all these investigations, we're just going to have to wait and see. But hopefully we'll get answers. You know, when they had the guy go in and or actually the young 15-year-old girl went in and killed some people, I think, at a Christian school here not too long ago. We still haven't gotten the results of that. You know, why that person went out. We don't know what happened. You know, the gay person, a transitional person went in and killed some people, had a manifesto. They won't release that. Hopefully, when Trump becomes president, all these questions will be answered because we'll also have a new director of the FBI, a new attorney general, and hopefully they will basically start speaking the truth to the American people and stop withholding the truth, and we can start building trust again and competency. Because right now, I don't have a lot of trust and confidence in federal agencies. I don't like the directions that the government has gone in the last 20-plus years. We have a bureaucracy that is entrenched, that does not want change. I think they run the government, and the elected officials are just transients coming through that they have to tolerate for a while. But they're the guys really in charge, and practically speaking, they pretty much are the people that are in charge. And hopefully the Trump revolution will come in and it'll change that. Now, that comes down to what's happened today. We have a new Speaker of the House, actually the old Speaker of the House, Mr. Johnson, which is good, I think. Hopefully he's a decent and honorable man, not perfect. He doesn't get everything we want to get every time. Politics is a team sport, kind of like war. Everybody's kind of got to get behind the team. You have a few star players, the tip of the spear, so to speak. Donald Trump is the tip of the spear, but a lot of people have to get behind him for him to be effective and be able to do the job we want him to do. We cannot be fighting amongst ourselves. We cannot be doing our own thing, as three congressmen started to do today. It looked like he wasn't going to be elected on the first ballot. Joaquin Jeffries was actually, a Democrat, was actually ahead for a while. And it could very well be, had this not changed at the last minute, two congressmen decided at the last minute, okay, I'm going to change my vote to Johnson to give him the speakership of the House on the first ballot so they can now get down to business certifying the election on Monday of President Trump, and then doing the things they have to do between now and the inauguration 17 days from now when Trump becomes president. And we better start praying that he is safe and God keeps him safe and he has things for him to do. Because believe me, I am really fearful that something's going to happen to him. They're going to do everything they possibly can between now and then to keep him from assuming the office of the presidency. And there's enough evil people out there, deranged people, and some people who are not deranged and just plain simply evil, who will do whatever needs to be done to keep him from assuming the presidency and thwarting his agenda, which is your agenda, to basically restore the liberty in this country, to put the government back in its proper place of being servants of the people and carrying out the national will, not the will of a small elected bureaucracies that have their own agendas, but the actual will of the American people. So he's not there yet, but we got to start working together. And having one guy, I think a guy named Massey, a Republican or an independent from Kentucky, decided he wasn't going to vote for him, so he didn't. But you only have a two-vote majority in the House for all practical purposes. Mick Johnson, the Speaker. So he's going to need everybody's support because we've got about 18 months to produce some results. We actually have the first 6 months to get Trump off the ground. The next 6 months going to be absolutely critical for Trump, Republicans, to do what they need to do to get his agenda started, to get his people confirmed, to start making reforms in these agencies, to create, get a budget before the Congress, passed in the Congress and signed off by the President, get the Senate to agree as well, and to start making some real reforms take place in the government of the United States. We will see what happens, but it's about as bad as it can be right now, and these two terrorist attacks, I hope they're one-offs. I hope they are not indicative of what this year is going to be. That's something to be very much concerned about. We don't need any more of this. The New Orleans terrorist attack, it's just really, really a sad thing for the families that happened there. You know, this has happened before. On December 20th, you had five people killed and 235 people injured at a German Christmas market just, 11 days ago, something like that. And yet this happens again here. So that's probably where he had part of his inspiration. But still, I wonder. Do you have questions about the people that are coming in, their qualifications? I think they'll do just fine. Pam Bondi is the Attorney General. Cash Patel, Director of the FBI. Tulsi Gabbard, Director of National Intelligence, I'm not sure about. Kristi Noem is Secretary of Department of Homeland Security. She was a governor. I'm not worried about her at all. So I guess I'd worry about Tulsi Gabbard as Director of National Intelligence because she's got very little experience in that area. She's known to be skeptical of intelligence organizations. That's probably a good thing. And I'll tell you why. I spent many, many decades working in the intelligence community, and I know there's a lot of pressure to conform to a certain point of view. And it comes from the top. You can have a differing point of view, but getting that point of view heard is very difficult. You get a lot of pressure from your superiors to comply with what their perceived agenda might be. And unfortunately, what goes to the president is just scrubbed so many different times by so many different people. You put out a report, and the time he gets up to senior leadership, it doesn't look anything like what you wrote in some cases. Not always, but in some cases. I was fortunate that I worked in the military side. My stuff went up to three-star generals, and they listened to it. They sometimes ask very hard questions, but unfortunately, leading up to the first Gulf, to the Gulf War, one in Iraq, when they said, oh, there's weapons of mass destruction there, there was a national consensus amongst the intelligence communities and other agencies from other countries that Saddam Hussein had nuclear weapons. He was working on building an atom bomb. He was working at a lot of chemical weapons. He had biological weapons. He did have, at one time, he did have a program, but after the first Gulf War back in the 1990s, we had inspectors go in, and they virtually rooted him out and they destroyed him. But that wasn't the message that people wanted to hear. And you look at the intel reports, it was like circular reporting. They didn't vet their original sources. They had reports, and they took them at face value. This came from the Vice President of the United States as well. He had people that were very supportive of him. He believed this. He really did. Unfortunately, they were wrong. You had a major in the Marine Corps Reserve get before Congress and testify Saddam Hussein does not have nuclear weapons. We've identified them, and we've captured them, and we've destroyed them. And he was laughed at. And you know who laughed at him and said, that's above your pay grade, pal? None other than Joe Biden when he was then Senator Joe Biden. He mocked that man. And said, that's above your pay grade. I don't, you know what you're talking about. So that's kind of where we went. And that's how we had wound up invading Iraq. And we looked all over the country. We scoured every place, lifted up every rock, every timber, every place we could possibly imagine it would be. And we found supposedly a van with some mock-ups or something that looked like he might have a chemical weapons lab in the back of a semi-truck. Now, that's about the size of a criminal drug lab you might have, you know, somewhere where you send a couple of fire engines over and they take it apart. And the drug agents come in spacesuits and they clean it up. That's not worth a war. But that's about the only thing that they found. They never really found chemical agents. They found no biological agents. There were no nuclear materials in Iraq because they had, in fact, been destroyed because people didn't show enough skepticism and do enough questioning, hard questioning. Maybe Tulsi Gabbard will be skeptical enough to make and say, show me, prove it, I want to know. Because too many times, too many senior leaders have been, okay, that's fine, good job, pat them on the back, and accepted it at face value. In that case, it led to a war, led to hundreds of thousands of people being killed, not by us, but by each other in a civil war that resulted. But, you know, we lost 7,000 soldiers in the war on terror, and about 5,000 of those guys were killed in Iraq, not to mention all the people who were wounded, and all the guys and women who were maimed, lost limbs, things like that. You know, I look at that war, and then we just walked away in 2011 under Obama. It was all for nothing. I hate to say that, but what did we accomplish? And we got some people left in Syria. We're not doing too much over there. We pulled out of Afghanistan. All the blood and treasure that we have spent in 20 years, all the national credibility in the world we've expended, and I have to say for what? Because intel people did not properly vet their sources, and they misled national leaders, or national leaders didn't ask hard questions. Those kind of things have to be asked, and they haven't been all too often. So we'll see what happens. I remember when Eisenhower's president. I read about some of the things with him. He was pretty hard-nosed about this stuff. You know, being a former four-star, five-star general and a Supreme Allied commander in World War II in the European theater, he asked really tough questions. And when he became president, he asked really tough questions. And he had really high standards. And he was very, very skeptical of people if they didn't have their stuff watertight and do it right. And that's what you need to have, because lives depend on what you do and the decisions that these leaders make. And if you get it wrong, you know, it's not just, oops, sorry about that. You know, people die. That's what happens when you make mistakes. So I'd like to see some really tough people, you know, who do not have a lot of invested in the intelligence community make these decisions. We'll see what happens. We'll be back in a few minutes. Just a moment.
Hi, this is Gary Brill, and I've been writing and producing radio ads for Davis Body Shop since the 1980s. However, lately I found that I don't have to write very much because our customers are telling the Davis Body Shop story better than I can. Take, for example, Natalie. She was in an accident and took her car to Davis Body Shop. Natalie, what kind of service did you receive?
Superb service. The process was smoother than I could have expected, and they eliminated any extra stress. They worked seamlessly with my insurance company and appraiser, scheduled a rental, and kept me informed via phone and email. I had a trip planned during the time the accident happened, and they accommodated me in every way. When I received my car, it was detailed inside and out. I am so impressed by the attention to detail and level of service. Thank you, Davis Body Shop, for such a wonderful experience.
Thank you, Natalie. See Davis Body Shop for your free, no obligation estimate. They're on El Camino Real, in Atascadero, and at Paso Chevrolet on Theater Drive.
Escape the winter doldrums at Tatchy this January, because we're giving away mountains of cash every Friday. Four lucky winners every hour will win up to $5,000 cash. That's right, four chances every hour to win between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. And the more you play slots and table games, the more chances you have to win. It's my great escape, only at the Tatchy Palace Casino Resort in Lemoore.
Hi, Jean, this is Anne. Remember, my parents were so stressed out when they couldn't pay their bills? We are so relieved we found Attorney Rossi on Spring Street in Paso. He knows his stuff. He explained all of my parents' financial alternatives for free.
Rossi didn't charge you?
No charge. Rossi offers a free meeting to help guide people who have money problems. He says good people get into tough situations and need help. He said there are solutions to getting people out of debt, ways to save people's homes from foreclosure, and sometimes cancel tax debt and stop lawsuits and stop harassing creditor calls. Rossi says about a quarter of his clients don't need legal help to deal with their overwhelming bills.
Is he a debt consolidation attorney?
No, he said debt consolidation is usually a poor choice, but he does help clients settle lawsuits out of court. Sometimes it means filing bankruptcy, and sometimes there's other ways.
Rossi Law is right here in Paso on Spring Street across from Wells Fargo, and he offers a free initial consultation.
Hi, this is Heather Bourdain, and I am excited to announce that I've joined Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers. I was born and raised right here in beautiful San Luis Obispo County. I have over 20 years of experience in the insurance industry, and I'd be happy to review your current program. Every day I work with contractors, farmers, garage owners, restaurant owners, and more. I would love to hear from you. I can be reached at 805-540-3900 or heather@adlerbelmontgroup.com.
Okay, we're back, and the phone lines are open, 238-5775. You know, we had some interesting happenings this week. We had a crowd of anti-Semitic pro-Palestinian protesters rallying in Times Square New Year's Day, just hours after you had this ISIS-inspired guy down in New Orleans, this terrorist, decide to slaughter a lot of people. is saying, "We will honor all our martyrs," they said. You know, globalize the Intifada. What does globalizing the Intifada look like? We've been hearing about this. We heard it after the massacre of the Jews, October 7, 2023. We've heard it when you had the insurance executive slaughtered, shot in the back. By a lone assassin who decided that this man had to die because he was an insurance executive. He had no business with that company, nor no member of his family had members of that company. No policies, nothing denied. He just picked him out at random, decided he had to die, a father of two. And 40% of people under the age of 40 think that's okay. Well, this is what it looks like when you globalize the Intifada. When you pick people at random to kill for whatever cause, you have a guy with a truck goes into the New Year's Eve celebration, and just runs people down and kills them because he thinks he's entitled to do that. He is self-righteous, and he's going to go do whatever he's going to do, whatever cause he has. Now, those people may have been in sympathy with some of the things that he said. They may not have had any political views at all, but they were black, they were white, they were Hispanic, they were brown, they were male, they were female, mostly young, because it happened 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and young people tend to have the energy to party that late at night. Mostly young people were slaughtered for no reason at all because they were there and because somebody decided they had the self-righteous vindication to go out and do what they did, basically because the guy was a recipient of a lot of hate online. But when you globalize a cause like that, when you dehumanize people, this is what happens. So the next time says, we have to globalize the Intifada, or that insurance company guy had it coming. Well, were they willing to put their loved one, their wife, their daughter, their girlfriend, someone they love, their boyfriend, out there and say, well, we're going to slaughter you for this righteous cause. It's okay. And, you know, that's what pagans did, you know, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, before Christianity kind of became the predominant view in the Western world. They sacrificed their children to pagan idols by fire, burning to death, to appease them for a cause. They slaughtered their children. Well, you know, the Palestinians do that all the time. They slaughter their children. They let them wrap themselves up in explosive vests, and they go out there, put them in cars, and they blow themselves up, and they get killed, and they celebrate them as martyrs for this cause. They don't attack soldiers. They don't do something that's militarily significant. They just go blow up people, as if that's somehow going to change the world. But this is what it means when they get out and they shout these things. A lot of these people shouting this, by the way, are not American citizens. They are people who are visiting students from other countries, not American citizens at all, and they're here as guests of our country. Yet they feel they can come in and say, let's kill these people, and that's what they have. But anyway, next time you hear that from somebody, a young person especially, around the Thanksgiving Day dinner or something like that, just point this out. Are they willing to be the ones who were slaughtered? Or pick someone that they love, or they got a girlfriend or a boyfriend. Are they willing to say, okay, it's your turn. Go step in the disintegration chamber. You have to die for the cause, because that's what this basically comes down to. About as relevant, too. On other news, what's happening? You know, elections have consequences. Joe Biden becoming president has big consequences. This is what the Afghan people are suffering right now. According to the latest thing, the Afghan government under the Taliban, which took over because Biden allowed them to take over back a couple of years back, they've now suspended the operating licenses of non-governmental organizations that are in here doing humanitarian aid if they have any women employed by them. In other words, they had women in their employ who were teaching or providing medical services. Well, no women allowed. Within Afghanistan itself, education is now banned for all women beyond the sixth grade. They cannot have that, and they're not allowed to work in the medical profession either, which is interesting because women doctors, women medics, midwives are the only way Afghan women had any medical care at all, because men are not allowed to provide medical services to women, because women leaving to go anyplace had to be accompanied by a male relative. And the last thing they're going to let them do is a non-relative male in the medical profession is to conduct an examination of female members of the family. So Afghan women are going back to the dark ages as far as medical treatment, because they're not going to be allowed to have any. That's the liberating factor of the Taliban. And in Syria, since Assad has been overthrown, some people, it's going to be a good thing, got rid of that vicious dictator Assad. Well, these things have consequences as well. In this case, the education curriculum that's being adopted over there for students is considered a very conservative Islamic mandate. So, you know, extremists win again. Got to wish. Careful what you wish. Might get it. Anyway, we're out of time for this segment. Be back in about 10 minutes.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 1 o'clock.